Hello. Okay. Art, Christian Delutz from Art Laboratory Berlin. And this has really been a very exciting, I would say, year, because we met last April with Guy, and he showed us the video and a lot of the information behind this piece, so a bit of what you'll see in the next half hour. And it's going from that to the realization last night has been really quite extraordinary. Also very thankful to the Max Delbruck Center for Molecular Medicine, who've been really helpful, given Guy a lab where he spent the last 2 weeks. And actually, the HKV is, for yesterday and today, a branch of the Max Delbruck Center. So you're in a, you may not know it, but you're in a cell culture lab. So, Guy Benary was born in Los Angeles. He's a Perth-based artist and researcher. He currently works at Symbiotica, an artistic laboratory dedicated to the research, learning, and hands-on engagement with the life sciences. It's located within the Anatomy and Human Biology Department at the University of Western Australia. In the bioart world, it's really an amazing institution. It's recognized internationally for its innovation, working across science and media arts. And Guy specializes in biotechnological artwork, which aims to enrich our understanding of what it means to be alive. His works have been shown across the globe at numerous venues, museums, and festivals. You can see them; they're part of the permanent collection of the Museum of Modern Art. And in 2009, his work, Silent Barrage, was awarded an honorary mention at the Pre-Art Ars Electronica, and won first prize at VIDA. He specializes in microscopy, biological and digital imaging, and tissue engineering. His main research areas are cybernetics, robotics, and the interface of biological material to robotics. Much of his work is inspired by science and nature, and his artworks utilize motion and growth to investigate technological aspects of today's culture and the reuse of biological materials and technologies.
Thank you very much, Chris, for that. I don't know if I feel comfortable talking sitting down, so I'll just stand up with your permission. So first of all, thank you for everyone involved for inviting self to perform here, the House of World Culture, CTM, and Art Laboratory Berlin. And thank you for coming to this talk or series of talks. I'm going to talk today only about self. And it's really hard to talk only about self, because self, beyond being my biological self-portrait or my self-portrait, it is an accumulation of all the work that I produced in the last 17 years. So really, it was built on MiArt and Silent Barrage in Potentia. And it was quite poetic for me to kind of take everything that I've done before and kind of pack it into a new project that is my self-portrait. So I just want to start with two slides with a lot of text that kind of put the foundations to, or kind of the basis to, most of the work that I'm doing and some of the work that is produced in Symbiotica. This is a few quotes by Stephen Wilson, a friend and an artist that passed away a few years, unfortunately. And when he's talking about art and science, he's talking about the fact that the motivation of artists that research new developments in technology or science is different to the scientists and technologies. It's not for profit or any primary utilization. You know, the scientists have a very clear goals, well, artists do as well, but, you know, that are quite looking at utility, and artists are kind of exploring the cultural meanings of those technologies. Critique the idealized vision of science and demystify science and empower the public to participate in the dialogues. And this is something that is happening quite a lot in Symbiotica, the idea of demystification of science, where we ask or we invite artists to come into lab and to the lab and to actually experience hands-on, get their hands wet, and engage with those technologies. that are developed in those biological institutions. The second one is a quote by a friend and a colleague, Oren Katz, the director of Symbiotica, and he says that the form and the application of our newly acquired knowledge will be determined by the prevailing ideologies that develop and control the technology. When the manipulation of life takes place in the atmosphere of conflict and profit-driven competition, the long-term results might be disquieting. One role that art can play is to suggest scenarios of world under construction and subvert technologies to the purpose of creating contestable objects. This role of art makes the emergence of the semi-livings as evocative art objects and the multi-leveled exploration of their use relevant and important. And it's very relevant to self and the technologies that we use in self, because in a very maybe over a simplistic kind of way, what we're doing is we are looking at the future possibilities of bioengineering intelligence or bioengineering consciousness. It is not happening with self, but those technologies are going to lead us to that. And it's actually quite a scary thing to think about. And, you know, I mean, there's a few commercial companies that are using the same technologies that I use for self, the multi-electrode array. And the scary part, the very disturbing part, is that when you look at their websites, there's no mention of the word ethics. There's no mention of the word of them kind of looking at what does it mean to bioengineer consciousness. The only thing that they do is they ask money to kind of from venture capitalists to invest in their own company, because they can guarantee that in 4 years they will bioengineer consciousness. They will get to the point where they're going to have conscious semi-livings or living entities growing onto a dish, which I personally think that is bullshit, but you know, this is what they do. So as I said, working in Symbiotica, and I, you know, work with biological technologies, with emerging biological materials and emerging technologies. And you know, kind of coming from robotics, I look at it in kind of three categories: the hardware, the software, and the sensors. The hardware are the neurons. The hardware are the cells that I work with. Those neural networks are what I refer to as the wetware. Those are cells that are growing in culture outside of the body. Tissue culture is a very old technique. It's been more than 100 years that scientists growing life outside of the body in labs. The software is related to stem cell technologies that I use, induced pluripotent stem cells, which are quite interesting technologies that were developed in 2007 that allows us to reprogram or reverse engineer cells, take them back in time to become stem cells. So we take an adult cell that is a skin cell, and then we can get it to forget what it is, change the identity of the cells and make a stem cell out of it, a cell that has the potential to differentiate to almost any other type of cell in the body. And, you know, that technology is quite fascinating to me because of the idea of biological alchemy. I was really interested in a transformation of materials, biological materials outside of the body. And the last one is the sensors, which again is very interesting because this interface that I grow the cells on, and we'll see it in a second, allows us a read and write interface to and from the neurons. Those are the multi-electrode arrays, the MEA, that allows us to grow the neurons. When you grow neurons outside of the body, you just plate them, you put them on the surface with various treatments, and they spontaneously create a neural network and spontaneously starting to produce action potentials. And those multi-electrode arrays that have 64 electrodes fitted on their base, the neurons grow over it, the network is growing over it, and in 64, that's the resolution, in 64 areas, you can listen to what the neurons are doing, but in interesting enough, you can stimulate the neurons in 64 areas. And when I kind of looked at this technology, I kind of realized that that's an opportunity for me to learn about what's happening in those neurons, give them a body with those, using those interfaces, and basically be able to interact with them. So just as the terminology, I will use the word brain in this talk, but it's not a brain. A brain is a three-dimensional organ that evolved for millions of years or billions of years and has billions of neurons and trillions of connections. What we have here, what we have in our growing in our dishes, are probably 100,000 neurons that form a very complex network, but it's growing on 2D, and those were stem cells or skin cells that we asked them to be neurons. So, you know, I mean, it's not a brain, but those kind of brains still produce masses of data, and they're quite complex in their behavior, and they're subject to lifespan. They die sometimes before the performances, and you know, we use those kind of brains to lure the or those quote unquote brains to lure the viewers into kind of thinking about the possibilities of growing or creating or bioengineering those neural networks that may have the potential to be conscious and intelligent in the future. There's quite a lot of scientific papers that look at those neural networks and show that there is a possibility to entrain them to change their functional plasticity. We're not there yet, but I do believe that the stimulations that Schneider sent to those networks yesterday did affect in some way those this plasticity. And, you know, I mean, I do kind of believe that there's some... they're not conscious and they're not intelligent, but I do believe that there's some sort of vitality within them. So this is how it looks. With a close-up, those are the electrodes, the kind of, it ends up, this is the area that is recorded or records the neural activity and stimulates back, and those are the neurons that are growing on top of that. The dish itself looks like that. And this is just a plot or a visualization of 8x8 activity. How it responds to stimulation. So, when you stimulate the neurons, there's some sort of a immediate response, an accumulation of a burst of data. But this is one kind of aspect of the responsiveness, but then there's other resolutions of response over kind of time, seconds, hours, or even more, when you kind of look at kind of groups of bursts within the kind of network or kind of, again, what everyone is trying to look at is change of plasticity as the results of stimulations. And the embodiment, the bodies that I give to those brains or neural networks that grow on this interface. So the embodiment for me was a strategy to highlight the liveliness of them. I mean, I used to, when you look down the microscope and look at those neurons, you don't see movement. It's looking at a flower. The flower is alive, but you know, the movement is very slow. You need to have timeless photography of them to kind of realize that they're actually alive. With the neurons, it's like that. So, you know, I'll show you in a second, we had live cell imaging, like videos of them, but really it was the electrophysiology, and that's kind of an image from my lab, that kind of allowed me to tap into this erratic existence of those neurons and trying to kind of find out what's happening there. And when you talk about these neurons, I think that it's really hard not to ask those three kind of questions that to do with ethics. What directions will current emergent biotechnologies take us? What sort of responsibilities would we have when we create life in the lab? Because we are starting to create life, and you know, I mean, there's kind of a move towards trying to create more complex living systems in the lab, and we don't even have the vocabulary to describe what it is. And what ethical boundaries do we need to establish around those liminal living lives? And when we talk about neurons, artworks using neurons have the potential to evoke or elicit responses in regards to the shifting perception surrounding the understanding of life. By bringing possible scenarios to life, neural networks confront the viewers both instinctively as well as intellectually by calling into question the liveliness of the differential categories of life and death, human and non-human. So now I just want to walk you through SELF, the project that was performing yesterday with Schneider and today with Stina. It is my self-portrait, but I have to start with this slide because at the beginning of this project, I thought that I'll do it by myself because it's a self-portrait, but it was a very naive and silly kind of idea. It's a true collaborative project where seven people work together as equals to kind of make it happen. And I was very fortunate to work with these people, which are quite amazing. Self started with what could be seen as the materialist question underpinned by the belief that artistic practice can act as a vector for thought. What is the potential for artworks using biological and robotic technologies to evoke or elicit responses in regards to the shifting perceptions surrounding understanding of life and the materiality of the human body? I mean, this is something that reappears in my work. There's some sort of an artistic strategy, which is to problematize this technology, try to problematize it rather than celebrate it. And usually we do it by putting forward absurd scenarios. So in this project, and we'll talk about later on, is making a neural network a rock star, a musician. In other projects, there's other projects that we kind of looked at employing this strategy, which is quite useful because once you put those liminal lives and ask them to do things in the gallery, you're assessing this technology, you're trying to problematize this technology, and you're kind of luring the viewers into some sort of a cultural discussion about the future of those discussions. So, as I said, it was a self-portrait, and you know, when I started, I didn't really know what I'm going to do, and I just went and organized for a biopsy taken from my arm. That's kind of where the biopsy was taken from, a piece of flesh, and then I kind of rushed to the Symbiotica labs. This is kind of me looking at this piece of flesh immersed with media in the car park just before I went to Symbiotica, and we started to tissue culture the skin cells. This is the piece of flesh that produced probably billions of cells later on, billions of neural stem cells that I constantly use for self-projects. So we put it in we started to kind of tissue culture them, and this is my skin cells growing in vitro in the lab. You can see that they keep on multiplying, and when a cell multiplies, it kind of rounds up to a bright round cell, and then it divides into two. And you know, the shininess of that is to do with optics. So that was taken over 12 days. I'm just going to keep on to the next slide because I don't think that I have a lot of time. And then after I grew quite a lot of skin cells in the lab, I shipped the cells and myself to Barcelona, the University of Barcelona, and it was really quite amazing that the scientist that collaborated with me, Mike Dell, was working at the University of Barcelona, where Santiago Cajal, the father of modern neuroscience, was working. And one of the quotes of Cajal I really like, he says that every man can, if he so desires, be the sculptor of his own brain. And he's kind of talking about plasticity, obviously, but in the case of self, it gets kind of quite an interesting meaning. So I worked in Mike Dell's lab. That's the money shot of bio artists, I guess. I have to kind of put it in. And we grew stem cells. The stem cells are those cells that are in the main kind of colony. Around them, there are feeder layer cells, which is an interesting thing as well. You grow those colonies on cells that are irradiated and don't divide, but they just supply nutrients for the stem cells. And then, once I had quite a lot of stem cells, I froze them, which again, a very interesting concept about freezing life. So I have another project that is dealing with freezing life and cryogenics called the Snowflake, but we won't discuss it here. I froze my stem cells and I shipped them back to Symbiotica and worked quite hard for 2 years on protocols to grow the neurons. And here you can see that there are neurites growing, axon dendrites growing outside this clump of neural stem cells to differentiate those stem cells to neurons. And I think that this movie shows the differentiation two neurons quite well. You can see here on the on this side, those are neural stem cells. Those are the stem cells. And you can see that cells are migrating and neurites, axons and dendrites are coming out of them. And what's really nice, in a second it would kind of accelerate. You can see that the neurons, they're the growth cones. And they're kind of looking. They're looking for other neurites to create synapses. And this movie really kind of shows how there's some sort of an, I don't know if the word intention is right, but there's some sort of a move of those neurites to kind of find each other to create more and more kind of synapses. This movie is taken at day 8 of differentiation. And, you know, I mean, this is kind of those sort of movies that I saw at the beginning, that I saw at the beginning of my career, when I started this body of work 17 years ago. But it, to me, it wasn't enough. You know, that was kind of taken with a camera. I wanted to actually see what the or hear what they're doing through kind of electrophysiology techniques. And you can see that after 48 hours, the network becomes much more complex. And then I spent some time trying to grow them on this interface dish. That's the multi-electrode array. And that was actually the first, an image of the first time that I managed to get to grow the neurons and get action potentials firing from those two electrodes. It was quite an incredible day for me because I worked probably 2.5 years overall, 3 years until I got to the moment that I was able to get or hear action potentials. And then I kind of thought, well, it's my self-portrait. What would I do? I mean, what sort of body would I give myself? And I didn't really want to portray myself. I didn't really want to, you know, I have too much of myself in my own life. I decided to kind of portray one of my childhood dreams. You know, when I was young, when I was 12 years old, the only thing that I wanted to become is David Bowie. So I decided to kind of shift. There's a shift between a self-portraiture to a quest to become a rock star. And then I started to collaborate with Nathan and Darren and Andrew, and we started to think about what sort of musical body would we give ourselves. And we thought that we had a few kind of ideas, but we thought that the modular analog synthesizer is a perfect choice as a body that we would give those networks. And one of the main reasons is because even in I'm oversimplifying it, the both systems work in a really similar way. The neural networks have microvolts that go and pass between the neurites, between their axons and dendrites, the inputs and outputs, to produce data. And modular synthesizers have control voltage that is going through the modules to create sound. Both there's voltages that go through components to create sound and data. And this kind of made us think that really we can hook them up. We can interface. Even the word interface is not right here. We can just create one network between them without computers, without programming, without lookup tables, without wizardry, and kind of be loyal or keep the integrity of the data. And this is what we were trying to do. And this is why we chose the modular analog synthesizers as the medium to create a body for those neural networks. Beyond the fact that aesthetically, if you go to an electrophysiology lab in a university, this is how it looks. Another really interesting thing is that, you know, I forgot the name of the scientist, I'm sorry, but in the late 1960s, one of the scientists, a physiologist that won a Nobel Prize, he mapped the brain, a human brain, and he won a Nobel Prize for this work, but he did it without computers. He did it only with sound, only with listening. And we thought that it would be really interesting here to kind of come up with a project that puts away the visuals, puts away, you know, we're so biased towards visuals. We deliberately don't have cameras looking at the, showing the neurons. We don't have any kind of imagery surrounding it. We're asking people to listen just like this guy listened and mapped the brain and got a Nobel Prize for it. So it was all done with sound. Today, electrophysiologists use only visualization to kind of look at their data. So we came up, self works in that way where the neurons are growing in the incubator, which is kind of this area of the object. And the human musician, Darren in 2015, Schneider yesterday, the music of the human musician is streamed into the neurons or sent to the neurons through the multi-electrode array to stimulate the neurons. And the neurons, supposedly, I mean, they do what they do, but theoretically, they respond to stimulations if immediately or kind of in kind of a longer period of time, and control the synthesizers to produce sound. And it kind of creates some sort of a platform for an first of all, a feedback loop between the human musician and the neurons, and then create some sort of a platform that both musicians, the human and the non-human, can improvise. I'll just go through a few images quite fast. This is the neural interface that Andrew Fitch, the guy that designed the synthesizers, developed. But it's quite an incredible thing that he did because, you know, I mean, when we sat and talked about it, and I have a rig in my lab that, you know, we paid quite a lot of money for, probably $100,000, based on software of getting the signals, converting them to digital, and then showing the signals on the screen. He created the equivalent module only on through hardware, and I have to say that it kind of works even better because there's no conversion of signals from analog to digital. It's kind of just takes it and leaves it on the kind of analog sphere. So he did quite an incredible work. Each one of those squares relates to an electrode in the dish. Each one of them has an action potential out, just to kind of look at the data that is coming out, or neural noise, everything that is picked up out. And in 16 areas, there's stimulation in, where we stimulate the neurons through the human music. It's kind of how it looks without the patching. And just a couple of words on the design. Nathan here designed the object, and he was looking at various things, but what I picked up from his process was looking at the noise machines of Russolo as a kind of a starting point. It's from the design point of view, but also kind of conceptually with sound. Self is referencing the noise machines of Russolo and the way they worked. He looked at the big speakers of the late 50s, 60s. He looked at the structure of the cochlea. And I'm sure that if you talk to Nathan, there's a lot more there. And that was kind of the final 3D design of it. This is the first time that we got sound. We checked the interface. We worked only with one electrode and a very simple, without obstruction of sound. So it's kind of one to one. Each one of them is an action potential.
But this somehow feeds into the discussion about right? I think it's really I find it is talking about activity being part of the listening process. It's kind of the view that, you know, the music is this kind of a ephemeral
So those were, of course, the prototypes in my lab that Nathan, Darren, and Andrew were working on. I just want to show this. You can see here the neural activity on the software that I have, especially kind of this area shows the action potentials. And I don't know, I mean, I looked at those action potentials quite a lot with a lot of dishes, and there's something there, you know, there's some sort of a rhythm, a rhythmical behavior that they produce. That's our first show in Perth. It looked like that. Sydney. Here's with Darren, our the guy that is patching part of the Self project, playing with Clayton Thomas. And that's the dish, the first dish that we played with in Perth. Because it was in Perth next to my lab, I could take it back to the lab and kind of take an image. And, you know, I mean, I would like to believe, even though sometimes scientists would say that I'm naive, that part of this arrangement of neurons in the space and the, is to do with a change of plasticity or was affected by the stimulation that it got. Another thing about the object that, Nathan worked really, really hard on is he not only created an aesthetic object that can be exhibited, not only did he created, with the help of Andrew, a musical instrument, you know, that analog synthesizers that we develop custom-made only for Perth, for self. He also created a mobile lab. So at the front where the neurons are housed, it's a tissue culture incubator, a high-precision tissue culture incubator that has, that it's an environment that allows growth of cell culture, 37 degrees and 5% CO2. And also at the back, you can see here, there's a class one sterile hood that allows us to feed the cells and maintain the neural culture in field conditions. So anywhere we'll go, I mean, this time we didn't need it, but if we will need to kind of culture the cells in the gallery, we could do it. And you probably know, last night we played with Schneider. It was quite interesting, it was really excellent. And today we're really looking forward to play with Stina Javed. And lastly, he's not here because he's actually quite sick, unfortunately. Maybe spending 2 weeks with me did it to him. But Sebastian from MDC, he's just an amazing scientist. Not only that he's quite an amazing scientist that specializes in stem cells, so I was very happy to and humbled to kind of work with him in the lab. He just showed me the way and opened the lab to me, and you know, whatever I wanted, he provided. He was quite amazing. So I just want to thank again to the House World Culture, CTM, and Art Laboratory Berlin. Thank you very much.